This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios,
here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. I am Matt Perrault. He is Mike Herzing. Every week we talk about everything under the sun with everything to do with automobiles. And boy, is there a lot to get to, Mike. How are you, my friend?
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy, Matt. I mean, this is in some ways worse than the pandemic last year. I mean, some of the automakers are in worse shape right now than they were in like last August or in September. You know, this is a mess.
This is what the consumers are going to feel here. And we're going to talk about this a lot during our news and notes segment, because if you have tried to purchase a vehicle or if you have tried to rent a car across the country, you have encountered some of the more stressful and strenuous and crazy situations that we have seen, forget COVID, maybe in our lifetime, in terms of availability, options, and costs. If you're trying to rent a car here in Vegas, good luck. It is expensive. The options are small. And the car companies that do have decent selections are going to charge you an arm and a leg, $400+ a day to drive around a vehicle that you probably have paid $250 to $300 before. So we're talking about, you know, 25% increase in cost. And then if you're on a lot trying to buy a new vehicle, uh-oh, Mike.
It's nuts with how many chips. If people talk about this chip shortage, but each vehicle didn't have 10 or 20 chips. These vehicles have thousands of chips, so like 3,000 chips per vehicle. So this shortage is a mess. But the rental car, oh my gosh. And the other thing is used car prices are through the roof. If I had a bunch of used cars, oh my gosh, we could, it's like winning the lottery. It's nuts. People are selling their cars that don't even want to sell them because you get such good prices for them.
Well, and especially off lease, right? The off lease people, yes. If you're able to go ahead and pull vehicles off of leases, this is where the car company is like, you drive your lease. Like, I'm turning in my vehicle coming up in August. I've gotten four different things in the mail. You coming? Like, they want my vehicle. They want me to turn this thing in because they want our Jeep Cherokee. So, I mean, the resale value on these things, it's incredible. And forget what the little sticker thing says on your car in terms of like resale value. Your car is way more valuable right now than it was when you bought it, if you've got a lease right now and you're getting ready to turn it in. So stick around. Don't move. We've got a ton to come on our news and notes segment. It's a very interesting edition. Automotive reviews and more coming up next. It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
News and notes, Let's Talk Wheels. All right, Mike, let's get right into it here, because this is one of the more interesting times in the automotive space. Let's just start with the chip shortage and what this chip shortage is doing. These vehicles need up to 3,000 chips to be built, and we have a monster shortage. What is this causing in the industry?
Well, here Ford talks. They just announced a couple days ago that they got a great net profit for quarter one, but there's going to be a 50% cut in the quarter two output. We're talking over 1 million units they're going to lose because they can't build them because they don't have the chips.
So, make sure everyone understands this. Ford in quarter one reported what for a profit?
$3.3 billion.
They made $3.3 billion in Q1. So going into Q2, if you own Ford stock, you're like, woohoo, let's go. We're feeling good. And they come out and say, after we made $3 billion, we're going to only produce, not sell, we're only going to produce 50% of what we made in quarter one.
It's nuts. It's nuts, guys. It is such a strange time, but it all has to do with chips. And, you know, like they said, it's not like flipping a switch and the chip shortage can come back. It's going to be slow. And, you know, also when the chip companies sell stuff to the automotive companies, they don't make as much money as when they sell it to the guys that make the Xboxes and the cell phones and things like that. There, the profit's not there.
Interesting.
And so it's really weird. I saw that Porsche, for example, that's because of chip shortage. One of the best for the Cayenne and all the different cars because they're European. They have really stiff seats. Okay. Right. They're really firm seats. So they have this thing you're set up where you can go like an 18-way adjustable seats. It's a really popular option. Probably 70% of the vehicles sold will have this option. Well, they can't build it because they don't have the chips. So I can't do that seat stuff. Now, you know, there's these really complex chips that do a lot of things. And then there's the simple chips. But it's like one company is going back to analog speedometers because they don't have the chips to do digital. There are some companies that are having problems with the chips for the power steering control unit.
Ooh.
And so they can't produce this. And so it's just, it's nuts. And everybody didn't realize that, like I said, somebody told me that like, these vehicles are going to have 3,000 chips in them, each vehicle. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, because every LED light bulb is a chip. Every one. On the dash and everything, on the taillights, headlights. Goodness. Every bulb is a chip.
Every single bulb?
Yeah, that's what I hear.
So like on the Audi headlights where every single LED is individual outside. It's a chip. Every single one of those light bulbs is one chip.
To my knowledge, yes.
Oh my.
So it's nuts. I mean, that's what somebody told me today. I'm going, I better double check this one, but I believe it's true. But you know, it's a little tiny chip. But we take for granted these things. Now, those are very, very simple chips. Those are very, very basic caveman stuff. It's okay. Not the things that run the brakes, the anti-lock brake systems or the sway control or any of this other. Okay. Those are a lot more complex. And the ones that run these seats for these companies, that's a complex chip. There's the simple ones and the complex ones. And so I'm like, but what that's done is, because of the shortage and heavy duty trucks and things like that, everybody's keeping its value because they're not going to be any right now. Heavy duty trucks are keeping their value like crazy. I had one of the other journalist buddies of mine. He bought a Jeep Wrangler a year and a half ago, put 30,000 miles on it. He went on one of these sites where they, you know, they give you an offer for your vehicle. It was $800 more than he paid for the vehicle.
Dang.
After 30,000 miles. I mean, Now, then again, it'd be great to sell it, okay? But then what else are you going to buy?
Right.
You know?
You can sell it in a vehicle now, and there's no vehicles to be had. I mean, just to kind of go along what you're saying, so the average value of a used vehicle traded in the month of March hit an all-time high of $17,080, nearly $3,000 more than 1 year ago, which was the beginning of the pandemic. If you remember, March was the very beginning of the pandemic. So we hadn't gotten really into it yet. Really, it was March like 12th, 14th, somewhere in that range when things really started to fall apart. So we had pretty much half the month going in 2020. The lack of new car production because of the worldwide computer chip shortage has had a huge effect on the price of used cars. According to Edmunds data, the average value for all used vehicles traded in during the month of March at an all-time high compared to $14,000 a year ago. So the inventory for new vehicles at department dealerships nationwide is down 36%.
Yep.
36%. Three-year-old vehicles are retaining their highest value in the segment right now. And like you mentioned, Ford F1, a 2018 Ford Super Duty F-250 has the best trade-in value, retaining more than 80% of its as-new price.
Right, and then the Ram 3500 is at 79%, and it's the GMC is also keeping about 80% of its value. The Toyota Tacoma is keeping 79% of its value. That's from 3 years ago. Oh my gosh, which means technically your lease might be worth more than you thought.
So
you know?
Explain that to me though. Does it matter? Like, do I have anything to that? Is my lease worth more?
I don't know how leases work there, Will, but I know that when you set up a lease right now, if you could buy a lease right now, it would probably be less because the lease price is determined on the residual value. And if the residual value is really good, then the lease is going to cost you less money.
So it's a good time to lease, at least right now.
It
right?
really is. I mean,
so
it really
is a good
is.
Time to lease, which is good. Which is, I'm still hoping for the Grand Cherokee to be on the showroom floor coming up in August.
Yep.
But it sounds like that's not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, then we get into a shortage of rental cars. Now that the flights or something are opening up, things like that, rental cars, it's really killing it, because it's really a problem, because none of the manufacturers want it because the production's going to be down. They're not going to sell stuff to rental car companies because they don't make much money. It's all the basic models. It's really – everybody's cutting back on rental car sales even before the crisis here, the latest crisis. But it just seems
like there's a monster opportunity here for somebody who has a fleet of vehicles to just go ahead and like – wrap them in whatever you want to wrap them. Like if they're like say they're 2010 vehicles, right? You have like a boneyard, or you got something. You go ahead and wrap them up. Don't make them look pretty. Just wrap them in whatever branding you want to call it.
Right.
And then go ahead and start to just have these things be available to be rented, and start a rental car company somewhere and being like, look, our cars aren't pretty, but you get A to B. And I think people would be like, yep, I'm renting them.
Well, I've seen rental cars with 40 and 50,000 miles on them.
Oh yeah. See, in Vegas, that's not abnormal in Vegas because of our climate. You don't rust, you don't have any problems. And
I know, but they're having to keep them longer. That's the problem.
In Vegas, there's different categories of people who come in. Right. So some people just want a vehicle, and those people, there are, I would say, five different companies at the rental desk that are considered budget. And their budget, you will rent vehicles that will have 40,000 miles, no sweat, not even a question on them. Yep. And they just keep, they'll keep rolling them through. And but those companies now are becoming like, I could only imagine what Avis and Hertz and these different companies in Vegas are having to use instead of like their 5,000 mile, somewhat brand new vehicle that you're going ahead and getting. You're probably getting a 3-year-old vehicle, even from the Hertzes and the Avises of the world.
Well, sure. But I mean, like I said, our friend Brian Grant from New Car Spin, he is going up to Florida tomorrow, or actually went to Florida yesterday, and he's there now and for a dinner. And he went to go rent a car, and they want, it was going to be about $75 for a day and a half to have a car. It's going to be $450. And that's not for a nice car. That's like for the bottom of the line Chevy Spark, Hyundai Accent, that kind of stuff. It's a little teeny tiny Econo box. And they were talking here in Detroit, the Chevy Spark sells for rents for $105 a day when it used to be like 19.
Wow.
and then the trick is, I had another friend that they went, and they, seven of them went on a trip, and there was just last week, and they went to the East Coast and the big family thing. And they all flew in. They had a Suburban or an Expedition, a big SUV, reserved for the last 6 weeks. And not only was there a 3-hour wait in line, because people lined up out the door, but they ended up getting a vehicle that had a 5-passenger seating because there just wasn't anything else. Everybody has to sit on everybody's lap. And then they paid like 4 times what it's worth. And it's like paying somebody to beat you up. I mean, it's just terrible, I mean, come on. How long can we do this?
It's tough. We get through COVID and out of the frying pan into the fire here when it comes to where we are in the automotive space. It's a really tough gig out there right now. All right, we got a lot to come here on the program, including our automotive reviews. Mike's going to give you a review on a 2021 Jeep Cherokee. I've got a 2021 Toyota Sienna that we're going to review. Our interview coming up is with Nicole McElroy from Recaro Automotive, right?
Recaro Seats. When we met her at the at SEMA, but we've also met her at the event in Vegas Mustang.
Those are gorgeous. Yeah, really cool stuff. Yes. So we got those coming up. All that and much more. Don't move. It's Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Time now for our automotive reviews. Mike Herzing will have his here in just 1 second. Mine, I was driving a 2021 Toyota Sienna. This was the hybrid version of this vehicle. And boy, oh boy, this was nice. Now, I had the Platinum, so it's fully tricked out. It's got every bell and whistle you could want for this thing. So we're talking about a price tag of nearly $50,000. So not everyone's going to want to buy this. Not everyone can afford this fully loaded. However, just as a people mover, this is the ultimate vehicle
for anybody with a family. The fact that both doors on both sides automatically slide out using the key fob is a luxury, is a feature that I never really knew I needed. Now, I'm not a minivan type of person, but this thing did enough that if this was my vehicle, I could drive this thing. The captain's chairs that are optional, but we had them, maximize the cargo space and make it just awesome. I mean, this is not like a boring kind of like your grandmother's type of minivan. My family had a minivan a long time ago growing up. Nah, this thing, it's nice. It gets incredible gas mileage because it's a hybrid and it's boasting its best in class fuel economy. I mean, it's just, look, $50,000 is not cheap. However, you're talking about a 2.5 liter gasoline powered four cylinder engine with the electric motors, 243 horsepower. That's really nice. And you can get it. I mean, I was really impressed with the acceleration. I mean, people were kind of poo pooing it and knocking it down, but I liked it. I thought it moved. You go ahead and hit the gas. The thing was impressive. The grill is your typical Toyota grill. It has a lot of the similar, you know, markings that you would expect from a Toyota. It is as roomy and as comfortable as a vehicle as you could ever really want. I mean, it's got so much space. The power lift, the power trunk, which is really nice. A really big infotainment display. Look, it's still not there. I mean, Toyota still needs to do some work with their infotainment display, with their technology, but it had a really interesting compartment underneath the gear shifter. So like you had the dash and you had the typical drop down where you'd have the gear shifter and the cup holders and your typical places where you would store stuff. But under that had this huge space where you could go ahead and store purses or bags or your sunglasses or wherever you'd want it. It was awesome, super convenient, really, really nice, and a feature that you don't normally see in trucks or, you know, big vehicles. So that was really nice to have that, to be able to, you know, store some extra stuff around you when you're driving. And, you know, it's a hybrid, so you're talking about very quiet at the start and a pretty good, you know, a lot of torque out of the front, and then it really just gets up and goes. And I had no problems with the acceleration. You're not driving this thing. It's not a sports car by any means. You're not flying around in this thing. But I thought the interior was really nice. And again, I had the Platinum Edition, but you know, the seats fold down. There is tons of space. There is controls in the back to handle different temperatures in different parts of the vehicle, which here in Vegas is incredibly important, just given where we are with the heat and whatnot. Different people like it at different temperatures. It's that big of a vehicle. And I mean, it can legitimately sit 7 full-size adults and have no problem whatsoever moving around. So I found the thing to be really, really convenient, really, really nice, super comfortable. Now, again, I'm not saying this vehicle is for everyone. It's not. I'm not even saying it's for me. But if I was going to be driving a minivan, they've done a pretty good job. All right. And it's got every feature that your family would think of, every feature your family would need. And you could pull the seats out to get even more cargo space if you want. I mean, it's big. Okay. This is a really big people mover. And I didn't really understand that fully, that term, until I got in there. But you got your standard automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, your standard lane departure warning with lane keeping assist, your stand-up adaptive cruise control, which is really nice. And there are some warranties that are a little bit better in the class, but I mean, 0 to 60 in 7.7 seconds. And you're getting a complimentary, you're getting a 3-year, 36,000 mile limited warranty, a powertrain warranty for 5 years for 60,000 miles. You're probably going to put big miles on this vehicle. So getting 35 miles per gallon, you know, that's amazing. That's incredible. And you're going to be able to, you know, save some money on gas and drive around and really have, you know, whatever, you know, 4 or 5. If you have a big family, this is the vehicle, man. This is the vehicle for you if you've got a big family. The 2021 Toyota Sienna. I had the hybrid. I had the platinum version of this vehicle. It was super comfortable. It is the ultimate family vehicle. All right, Mike, what were you driving this week?
Folks, this week I was driving the 2021 Jeep Cherokee. Now, the model I had was the Latitude Lux. Latitude is one of their popular trim levels, and the Lux is a new version of it, which is a little bit fancier. It's got the Napa leather seats and the power front seats and lumbar adjustments and heated seats and premium wrapped steering wheel, remote start, which is one of my favorite things for these kind of cars. Cold morning, there's nothing better than to crank up your car, and it automatically turns on the heated steering wheel and the heated seats. You get out there, and it's just awesome. They do have the Trailhawk and the Limited. Now, Trailhawk is more of the off-road version with all the skid plates and the off-road oriented tires and things like that. And that's also set up to where you can drive through, you know, several, usually 20, 25 inches of water without any problem with this stuff. The one I had was really loaded up. Besides 4x4, which is really great, it had this huge dual-pane panoramic sunroof. I mean, it is nice. You can get it with the 9-speaker Alpine sound system, and you get the 8.4-inch touchscreen radio. It was just really a nice vehicle. This is all right. You know, it's got a 3.2-liter V6 with a 9-speed automatic transmission. It runs good. Fuel economy is 27 on the highway, and I think I got about 25. It said 19 city. That's about right. And I think I got 21 or 20 average, and it says 22. So, and I drive like crazy. So, awesome vehicle. This is for somebody that doesn't want a bigger vehicle. Okay. It's easy to load into, easy. Got a kid. The back seat's pretty comfortable. Seating for four, you know, the seats will fold down. You've got a big hatch, power hatch and things like that. And you can load up a lot of things. This is just a popular SUV. This would compete with maybe the Ford Escape or the, maybe the Toyota Highlander, something like that. It's, you know, my Nissan Rogue, but this popular vehicle, the panoramic sunroof was an extra. First of all, the base price was $31,625 on this one, which is pretty darn loaded. The panoramic sunroof, which is huge, it's almost $2,000, $19,995. I don't know that I would get. I'm not a big sunroof fan. It has basically everything you'd want. It has all the safety goodies and things like that. It has an Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. Of course, heated seats and heated steering wheel and things like that. Really nice leather trim bucket seats. It's really, this Napa leather is really comfortable. I took it out for a several hour trip, and it was just very, very nice. Let's see, that they have an optional equipment on it, which was the customer preferred package, which is the comfort convenience group, automatic dimming rear view mirror, AC with dual zone temperature control. It's got the 115 volt auxiliary power outlet, premium air filter, has got the power lift gate, which is kind of handy when you've got your hands full and things like that. This one had, like I said, this one had the bigger 8.4-inch touchscreen. It has a really nice instrument cluster display, a 7-inch cluster display. That's kind of nice. Universal garage door opener. It's got the Uconnect. Now, this says Uconnect 4, but I'm sure for 2022 coming out, it'll have the Uconnect 5, which is it's a nicer unit. Humidity sensors, all kinds of good stuff. This is a very nice vehicle. It's nice on the highway, quiet. Plenty of power, I think. This one, my model did not have a trailer hitch, and I don't know why it should have, because you can tow a trailer with this thing. This is an awesome vehicle. People love it. I know Matt loves his. Has all the things like parking assisting, adaptive cruise control. On certain models like the Limited, you can get stop and go. You can do. It's got all the warnings. It's got the blind spot sensors and monitors and things like that. Everything you know. This is just an easy vehicle to drive in and out of traffic, and smaller families or people that are maybe older don't need a big vehicle. This is a pretty nice one. If you haven't been to your dealer yet, of course you need to do it pretty quick because they're running out of cars with all this chip shortage and things like that. This would be a really good one to have. They have a really good. Everybody that I've talked to that owns one. My daughter-in-law has one and she loves it. I mean, she's had it for a couple of years, and it's just this design. And my gosh, she just, you know, put several thousand miles, 30,000, 40,000 miles on it, and it's been really trouble free. And she absolutely loves it. The only thing that she would sell it for is maybe a Wrangler. And check out the Jeep Cherokee. You know, if you want something a little bit bigger, you can go to the Grand Cherokee. If you want something bigger than that, you can go to the Wagoneer or Grand Wagoneer. So this is one of the ones you want to check out, the 2021 Jeep Cherokee. I know you're going to like it because it's a fun vehicle.
for listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's Talk Wheels. Mike Herzing along with Matt Perrault. Well, today this is fun. I've got a good old friend here. She's not that old, but I am. Nicole McElroy on the phone from Recaro Automotive, which offices right there in Detroit and across the world. Nicole, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thank you, Mike and Matt. Appreciate it. Yes. Very excited to be talking to you again.
Yes, I know. It's been fun since Las Vegas. But tell you what, gosh, Recaro, you've been with Recaro. I mean, they make the coolest seats. If you've got a real performance car, you've got a race car, you've got anything, they're all going to have Recaro seats. Tell the folks a little bit about the company. It's been around, what, since 65, 66, something like that?
Well, the founder of the company, he was in 1906. So the technology and innovation, what we call a history of first, really started out as a coach builder who then became a seat builder focused in performance. And that happened in the 50s. And really, it's been exciting since then because with the innovations that think of the first ever convertible top, who loves convertibles? Everyone loves convertibles, right?
Yes.
Well, the person that patented is the original founder of the company.
Oh.
And that's cool, right?
Yeah.
So he started in being innovative and creating what was called a Corsair, which is a coach builder, for a lot of the European OEMs that started out back then and grew from there. So then focusing on seating and becoming an expert in that and starting a bunch of firsts that happen in seating. You think of bolsters and seats that are standard. You think of racing shells. You wouldn't have a racing shell to go on a track today from William Reuter and the team going in and going, hey, does this make sense? How do we keep people safe? So we focus on safety, comfort, which leads to ergonomics. And I think you had a story around ergonomics and something that happened.
Yeah, it's real funny. I was telling you that I had a friend that way back in the 70s had a car accident, and he was driving a truck a lot, and somebody rear-ended him, hurt his back. And he could not drive. I mean, literally after an hour of driving, he used to do a deal between Houston, Dallas, and then New Orleans, and then back. And he just couldn't do it anymore. Sometimes he tried Houston and Dallas, which is a one-day thing, and he just couldn't. He said it just killed him. Somebody told him about Recaro seats, put a Recaro seat in it. We're talking this is the 70s. He was fine. I said, this thing is so stiff and this. He said, but it's adjustable to me. I've got all these different pieces. You know, it fits me perfectly. And I was like, awesome. He says, it's like measuring a shoe. I mean, it's just perfect. Make the changes, and I'm there. And then I realized, you know, race car drivers, same thing. You know, the seat's got to hug them. It's got to fit them. And you guys, you'll see these guys come in, and they'll come in for a pit stop on an endurance race, and the seat comes out, and the other driver comes in. You know what I mean? And a different seat comes in, and it's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Well, it's crazy because what they are doing nowadays is padding. And thinking of padding and racing in the future, we just came out with a year ago what's called the podium race seat. And it's our latest technology. And it's the first ever racing shell to have AGR certification, which is a comfort certification in Europe. So the seat that your friend was driving was a certified seat for comfort based out of Europe and then brought here for the North American market.
Wow.
And we still do that today. And in Europe, it's a script. So somebody goes to a doctor, they have a back issue, they get an AGR certification script to then get a seat for their vehicle, which is pretty cool.
It's so cool.
To think about how now we have that applied to racing seats. And then earlier this year, we were able to announce that we have the first FIA certified racing shell for the off-road market,
right.
And it has a patented foam technology that we call Energy Plus that helps protect the spine in vertical impacts, which is different from being on a track when you do off-road.
Right. Yeah, you're bouncing up and down, and by the end of an hour or something, your back so hurts so bad, it's crazy. But with your seats, it's not going to be a problem anymore.
Yeah, and we've had some really good partners to help us do the development. A lot of good race car drivers and truck drivers that, you know, are very good at their sport, but they want to be safe and they want to have that right cocoon around them to make sure the armor is there to keep them in place and not have to worry about the focus of winning versus being safe.
Well, you know, if you've got a high performance, like I said, last time I saw you, we were at Las Vegas Motor Speedway with the Mustang GT500 and the Shelby, and it had your seats. And, you know, really, you guys are the gold standard. If you want performance seats, and you've got a car that's going to go fast, especially a car, and you've got to slam side to side and do this step and still have comfort, yours is the only seat that really grabs you, just holds you in, and it's so adjustable. And it's, you know, they you know, if you want any European car, anything, any performance car, there's always an upgrade. You want to go to Recaro seats. And everybody goes, yeah, of course. And it's just kind of neat to have, you know, that kind of, you know, name recognition.
Background, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just crazy.
And we're growing it, too. So we are, we've been hearing the feedback. People want more. And so we're doing a new product strategies, developing what the next generations of seats are going to look like and feel like. Still keeping the core elements. You know, what you're talking about is tactile. So, for example, the materials we use that are moisture wicking, because on a track or even if you're racing, the performance element, you still have a lot of nerves and things that happen, right? So you need something that wicks away the moisture from your body.
Right.
You also need to keep you in place and hug you in the right way. So we design the seats around your spine. So we call it form follows human. So we use the human body to design around. That's not just something that is placed on a seat, but in a seat. And then we also are taking the brand in other ways too. So we just launched, as of yesterday, our first ever merchandising line.
Really?
So now people will have the gear to go with their seats.
Okay, not just T-shirts and things like that. What are you selling? What do you have now?
No. So we will have some T-shirts and stuff that launch the brand, but we have elements that match the seat attributes. For example, we use the outline of the designs of the seats mm-hmm. to do on the different pieces. So there's a classic line, there's a race line, and the dynamic line.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also use attributes from the seat, so curvatures that are designed into the pieces that you would see from a backpack to we'll have our first ever racing suit, racing gloves.
Oh, wow.
So we're really making it fun. We'll have, you know, just like in the old days when you had an older car, you wanted to have the matching blankets mm-hmm. that match the seat inserts sure. in your vehicle with the gloves that match it. And then the nice gentleman's jacket within the inside of the jacket having the pattern of the insert of the seats. So really taking it to the next level of having a full-on lifestyle approach.
That is so cool. You know, because I've seen people that had their – I had a guy that had a Camaro, had a seat stolen. This is what we're talking about 5 years ago. And come to find out that the original equipment seats are crazy expensive. I mean, they're just obscene. People have no idea how expensive seats are to replace. And you're cheap. Yours were actually about the same price. He went with Recaro's, and he just loves them. And he's still, you know, they look like they're brand new, and he'd probably gone 150,000 miles in that vehicle. But it's just amazing how important seats are. People just kind of – it's just one of the things you take for granted.
It's number three in customers deciding for their purchase.
Right.
So when people are – questioned and there's a survey that goes out, it ends up being the number three decision maker in a purchase of a vehicle.
That's nuts. And you can actually replace some of the parts to it if you have tear up the bolsters or this or right, can't you?
Well, you can. It just depends on which if it's the OEM seat or if it's an aftermarket seat, because there's different processes. So an OEM seat, you want to make sure you go back to the dealer and follow the warranty process
right. So
that you can get the right coverage. And then if it's something that is an aftermarket, then you go directly to the dealer you purchase from, or we have our shop online, which is recaro-automotive.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a customer service area to insert your information for us to get back to you.
Yeah, folks, go to RecaroAutomotive.com. They've got some of the coolest things and the coolest designs and the seats and everything. I mean, my gosh, it's just – I mean, I first saw them years ago with like my friend, but also I've seen them all through the years with the Hot Rod Mercedes, the AMGs. You always buy – it's really performance car. I'll always have Recaro seats, whether it's – you know, it's just amazing.
Well, thank you so much, Mike and Matt. This has been great.
Yeah, I mean, but we've still got a few more minutes. But tell us a little bit. Oh, by the way, I can't talk to Nicole without saying hello to your little guy, Aiden, who's not a little guy anymore. He's an awesome kid, right?
He's an awesome kid. You know, we met originally when I think he was 1 year old, and now he's 9. So really has changed over the years. But, you know, I think he's the next enthusiast down the line to help bolster that automotive experience that he's gained over the last 9 years.
Well, you know, it's easy. Kids start out either in go-karts or on dirt bikes. Mine started out on dirt bikes. I wished I'd started him out on go-karts.
He has a go-kart.
There you go. And I'm sure at some point he'll have one of the Recaro racing seats in if it doesn't have it on now, right?
He does for his sim. So we also have a sim, and we're about to launch a sim seat as well.
Really? Okay, so you're moving into seats besides just car. I know you have stuff like my sons use your seats on their Baja Racer, their Score Racer. A lot of the teams do. It's real popular. Because, like you said, it cushions their spine and things like that. And it just – it's so important because you're so busy trying to race.
Right, support.
Trying to drive fast that you can't worry about hanging on. You know what I mean? And your seat
– Well, it's not just hanging on, yeah. You also need to make sure you have the right support points on your body because otherwise you'll get fatigue. And that means – as soon as you go to walk out of your vehicle, you can't stand. Yeah. So one thing that is very important, and a lot of our drivers say, is where those touch points are on their body to help them continue to race. And then when they have to switch out, you don't want a driver not being able to switch out correctly when they do the driver exchange as well.
Okay. Now, as far as social media, what's Recaro on social media?
We are Recaro Automotive on social media. Oh. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and any platform for the most part, but we're always Recaro Automotive.
You know, it's funny. I saw your – I know we're running almost out of time, but, I mean, I saw you the other day. I looked on your website, and you have these really cool shirts that match the seats, which match the jacket. Now you're going to have the driving suit. That's kind of cool. You know, you'd be like Barbie.
It's exciting. I don't know if it would be Barbie Recaro, but I think it allows us to – let our fan base embrace the brand and be able to grow with it as well. Because we also have racing. We have people that use it in their UTVs, like you mentioned, an ATV type market. And also we have people that have it in their classic cars and ergonomics. We also do commercial vehicles.
Right. I know. It's like real big. You're big in commercial vehicles. And if you're on the road a lot, and you're doing this kind of stuff, oh my gosh, you're getting in and out of the car. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, you spend a few grand for the seat, and it's really worth it, right?
It is.
Right. Nicole, it's always great talking to you, and really thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And I really hope you're going to come back. I'm going to have to corner you again. Folks, that was Nicole McElroy from our friends at Recaro Automotive. Now, don't go away. There's more to come, including our weekly classic car segment with Jeremy Bierenbaum from classic.com. It's a lot of fun, and all of it right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. You guys can go to the podcast and get an interview that Mike Herzing does each and every week with Jeremy here at Bierenbaum from classic.com. Mike, what are you and Jeremy talking about this week?
Well, we're talking about patina. You know what that is?
No.
That's when there's like an older car that's all rusty looking and everything, and then they cover it with clear coat, and it looks cool. And do you find a vehicle like that? Do you keep it, or do you paint it?
Oh, that's funny.
You know?
The car show on Netflix, Rust City.
Yes.
I forget the actual name of it, but that's the first time I ever heard that. So I have heard that term before.
Yeah, patina. And it's kind of a rusty paint and stuff like that. And
people like it, right?
And it's very popular right now, and sometimes it's worth more. There are some people that actually make newer cars look like that.
Why?
There are people that are doing that to Porsches.
What?
Brand new Porsches.
Oh,
yes.
Come on.
I'm serious. And I'm like, are you crazy? But that's what they love. It loves it. Sometimes it makes it more valuable, but sometimes it doesn't. Do you want a vehicle that looks all beat up and, you know, and raggedy and
that's
rusty?
That's the thing that's the thing in Vegas. That's the thing that I keep on whenever I see matte paint, like certain vehicles get away with matte paint, but some vehicles that have matte paint look dirty.
Yeah, they look terrible.
They look terrible. It's like, that was not a vehicle you should have matte paint on.
Right.
And I get the idea. I mean, it's to stand out and look different and whatnot. But certain vehicles just do not look good with that. So I'm assuming if it's popular, it'll be here in Vegas at some point. Somebody will have a vehicle. I'm sure they'll have it.
It's old funk. You know what I mean? Wow. It's just wild stuff. But we talked about that. There's a big story about that. Very cool. It's crazy.
You guys go hear that on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. Just go and search Let's Talk Wheels wherever you get your podcast. And Mike and I are coming back next week, same place, same time, for another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the Let's Talk Wheels podcast classic car segment. As usual, we've got our guru, Jeremy Barenbaum from classic.com on the line. Jeremy knows everything about it. Jeremy, what's happening in L.A. this week?
Not too much. You know, just staring at all the pictures that came out of the paid auction last week. Yep. Feeling like I missed out on some fun time.
Yeah, the swap meet was great. It was really fun. And I've got a whole bunch of pictures to put up. I think I took about 130. A lot of cool stuff, that not just cars, but there were a lot of vehicles. I saw, in particular, about a 68, 69 F-100 short bed, nice truck, kind of a light gray colored, kind of like a bluish gray, maybe an off-white, for example. I don't know, it's pretty old. Had a lot of, they call it patina. I used to call it rust, but now they polish it all off, and they put a clear coat over it, and they call it patina, okay? And somebody's like, oh, man, that's really great. What do you think about that? I know it's the going thing right now because some of the TV shows that are doing these car rebuilds and stuff are doing this all rusty stuff, and I know it looks cool in a way, but when do you decide, would you rather have it just repainted, you know, even the original color and make it look good, or what? What do you make this? How do you make the decision?
Man, it's a really tough decision, and let's even go back before that. You know, you're talking about how popular patina is right now.
Right.
It's so popular that you can order a Porsche from the factory, you pay extra, and it comes with patina, like, already done on the car. And they're saying, you know, why have to wait 50 years to have your car look like this? If you want it to look like this, you know, you can have it now. And it's really interesting because you see it from all different sides. You see it in, like, the VW world and really ratty cars, but people want to keep the original paint. You see it in the hot rod world, or what we call, like, rat rods.
Right.
You know, people that have these what look to be unfinished projects, but it's a done thing. And, you know, patina is really, it's kind of rust. It's you know, the paint chipping away. It's the trim is losing its luster, its gloss, it's oxidizing. And it's a really a tough decision for some people when they look at a car and they say, I want to keep the patina on this, because it ends up being more work to try and keep that, to do body work, to do anything on the car. But, you know, if it's a car that was painted by someone, you know, really famous, like Dean Jeffries or Gene Winfield, or it's been pinstriped by, you know, like Von Dutch or a guy like Hot Dog, then, you know, it's worth it to keep that patina to a lot of people. You know, the value of that car is like a fine art painting, you know, and they want to show that off. But if it's like, you know, a car from the 70s that was not painted well and the paint's starting to chip and fade away, then it's a little bit different story. It's more of how much do you like it?
Yeah. I mean, there's always a spot on pickup trucks. I remember my dad used to have it. You'd always drive the pickup truck with your arm, with the window up down and your arm sticking out, and you'd always have this little rust spot from the sweat under your arm right there on the door, okay, the upper part of the door on the outside. And that was just the way it was. And now these people are focusing on that. I mean, they take it and they smooth it out, don't get me wrong. Then they put a clear coat over it so that way it doesn't change. But, I mean, some of these things, they look – I mean, some of these cars – had like a different color fenders on them, stuff like that, and you can tell it's kind of like Frankenstein, but they liked that, and then they put clear coat over it to preserve it, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, what happened to making it? I mean, if the paint job's okay, but just in a couple little spots, that's one thing, but I don't know, I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, I just don't know how they figure out which is the way I'm going to go. I guess it's just personal preference.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the owner and what kind of build they have in mind. You know, I'll be at a car show sometimes, and you'll see a car pull up, and it looks like it's held to glue together with gum and glue.
Right.
And then you get over to it, and they open the engine, and it's got the most pristine, perfect, running gear, you know, engine, transmission, rear end setup. It's got disc brakes all around. And so they really put the value in, like, oh, this is kind of like a sleeper car to them. Or,
right.
You know, some guys don't want to show up to a car show and have the shiniest, perfect thing. They're afraid to drive it. They're afraid to even look at it. I really prefer when it's something that's got patina that, you know, was maybe one day or previously in its life a Bonneville racer. And so mm-hmm. you get that patina that's behind the wheel wells from all the,
right.
you know, stuff shooting up. And it gives it a look that you can't paint, you can't find anywhere else.
Right.
And then it's worth it.
Yeah, you know, you're right.
You know, I had a Volkswagen bus at one point in my life, and it was painted with a bunch of drivers' names and everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the patina, or I'm going to call it rust, was so bad in some places that stuff was falling apart. Like the bed of the truck, I was afraid if I put a toolbox in it, it would actually fall through in some of the spots. And so to me, it was more important to be able to use the car in the manner which I had in my head.
Right.
So I totally restored the car, but I took pictures of all the decals, of all the painted areas of the car, because my idea is at some point I'm going to finish that and I'll paint it exactly like it was. And it might not be the original paint job or anything like that, but it's still the surviving, you know, replica of that car. And it's more work. It takes more time. It takes more effort. But, you know, to someone like me who values the history or providence of a car and where it's been and what it's done, it's important to do those things.
You know, you're right. You're right. And there's some more and more of these people doing this. But I wonder, like, so basically on some vehicles, it might increase the value. And on some vehicles, it might decrease the value.
Yeah, totally. And you know, nowadays there are ways to do it where if you do the bodywork, you can actually paint a faux patina on your car if you really like that. And you're worried about, say, like, having just parts of your car still falling apart, having open metal, you know, that's what causes rust. That's what, you know, is the biggest fear to most classic car buyers. So you could do all the bodywork, make your car perfect. And there are painters that can do faux patina jobs that you can't even imagine.
Really? I mean, so I didn't know that they made fake stuff.
Yeah, so they make paint that actually acts like it's got little metallic pieces in it, and that oxidizes with the metal on your car
uh-huh.
in a way that creates that patina. But then they also have painters that, you know, can just mix up paints and the way they apply it, and then maybe they I don't want to say smear it, but or sand it down in certain places, mm-hmm. and they give that worn look on the car. They take away the sheen, or they won't apply a perfect clear coat.
Right.
You know, those sort of tricks that they know how to do to create the look of that.
Yes. You know, it's just real funny. I was looking, when we were at Pate last week, they had probably close to 100,000 people coming through there in the 3 days, and it was weather was really crappy one of the days. Otherwise, it would have been worse. I mean, it would have a lot more people, but it was just amazing. Some of the vehicles they had there were just totally rusted out, and they sold in a heartbeat. You know, it's just funny. Some people would rather buy a skeleton of a vehicle, and then just because they're just going to take the body parts and put it on a later model chassis. You know, I'll take the frame.
Right.
I saw one guy was putting a Chevy stuff, and he was going to put it on a Toyota truck, Toyota Tacoma,
okay.
running gear.
Yeah.
And I said, really? He goes, yeah, I don't care about the frame. I don't care about the engine. I'm going to put it on top of this because I measured it. It's going to fit. I have to lengthen one little spot. Other than that, it'll be – I was like – he says, then I'll have a 50-something Chevrolet truck that is really underneath. It's going to be a 2000 or 2001 Tacoma. And so I was just like, well – I've seen that before, but everything was like Model A's, Model T's. I saw some nice Model T's, some of the later ones that had electric start. And I was talking to John Anderson about how to start them and how, you know, and he says, it's just, you know, I didn't know they sold so many, 9 million of the Model T's. And there's still a lot of those parts out there. There is a lot of stuff. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there, but the harder thing is finding people that are willing to drive a Model T on the road just because, you know, it's a very active driving process from, you know, stopping the car. It doesn't have standard brakes like we're used to.
Right. Yeah.
So, like you said, a lot of people will take a Model T and put it on a newer model car or do something to make it mm-hmm. more drivable. And I really attribute that to the internet and being able to share information and say, hey, you know what? This exact platform fits well with this car. And people are able to share that information and build stuff in a way that doesn't require you doing all this stuff alone in your garage.
You know, I saw years ago, back in the early, I guess it was mid-80s, one of my neighbors had a Model T truck, just the body, and the body was in good shape. The frame was gone. The engine was locked up, and, you know, it was just – but the body, the fenders and the cab and everything were – and the bed were great. He found an early 80s Toyota truck that had been rolled. They took the body off, and he put it on there, and it had an extra 2 inches worth of gap between the cab and the bed. And they put, like, a little headache bar there. To make up the gap, and it bolted right on. So then he ended up having a Model T with an automatic transmission and the power steering and power brakes. And so it was very, very cool. There's a lot of those things you can do, and it works, but it's a lot of work, you know.
It's a lot of work, and it's just like you know talking about with the patina. It's one of those things that sometimes is more expensive than just going and getting a traditional, you know, $10,000 paint job, because it takes so much more time and effort through a lot of different steps of the process to keep that patina there. And you see it a lot in high-dollar cars, you know, Ferraris, Aston Martins, where it's got the original paint job from 70, 80 years ago.
Right.
And guys go through some insane lengths just to keep it the way it is. Like, you know, imagine you got to pull out the window to change all the window trim, but you want to keep the patina and the effort involved in removing all that so gently.
Yes.
Because a lot of times when you strip a car, you know, pieces have been matted to the paint for 70 years. So when you take them off, stuff is going to come with it.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right.
It's just a process, and when you make that decision to do it in your build, it's something you just got to stick with, because it'll be worth it at the end, but you can't do it halfway, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. All right, we're going to continue this next week, folks. Anything else in closing, Jeremy?
No, I don't think so, but if anyone has a classic car they want to sell that's patinaed or not, you know, reach out to classic.com and we'll help you get started in the process.
Yep, next week or so you'll see my truck up there. So, all right, folks, thanks for tuning in to the podcast. If you have any car questions, go to letstalkwheels.com, hit the contact Mike button. It's easier, though, info@letstalkwheels.com, send an email. Jeremy and I work to give everybody an answer. Remember, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com. You can find us on classic.com, Facebook, Instagram. Tell your friends about the podcast. Ask them to subscribe. We'd really appreciate it. So, in closing, on behalf of Matt Peralt, Jeremy Barenbaum, our wonderful producer, Jack McCraw, and myself, thank you for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels radio podcast. I'm Mike Herzing. Happy motoring, folks.